All right. We're recording. I'm on the road, believe it or not. And, so we're making a recording here. And, okay, here we go. Oops. Okay. Just had a thought this morning because I was reading an article, and it's really interesting how all articles, and I'm not here to say it's a conspiracy, you know, I'm not prepared to say that there's a conspiracy of school lockdowns. Of schools being turned into virtual prisons. I'm not saying that that's a conspiracy. I'm saying that it is a prevalent societal attitude. And my thought is that we have to get beyond that attitude because it's wrong. It is the wrong way to address problems, is to do it that way. But let me talk about what popped into my head as this stuff was happening, and I imagine it will render itself into an essay called The Gateway Drug. And psychologists, sociologists, which I look at askance because can I honestly say a few things, and I have friends that are sociologists, I have friends who are psychologists, and not to impugn our friendship at all, but I'm sorry, the very basis of these things, one of the things that made me drop out ultimately of the child care, child development industry, was the orthodoxy, was the way that it tries to inculcate the mind into certain patterns of looking at life, looking at people. It all kind of revolves back down to catering to the generality. And the concept that everybody has to be treated equally. Now, I do comprehend the concept of all people being equal under the law. There is a specific reason to do that, that nobody is above the law. Sadly, we have gotten to the point to where we use the law to try to equalize things, which is backwards. Law has to treat everybody the same. Therefore, the first consideration of any circumstance is we don't want the law getting involved. I am always so grateful. I am always so, so grateful for the police officer who, when called upon the scene, his first attitude is, let's not bring the law into this. Is there a way that you guys can come to your own resolution without invoking me, the law enforcement, the police officer, law? Because law has to treat everybody the same. If you want your police officer to get involved, everyone will have to be spread across the hood. Everyone will have to be put in something into restraint. Everybody will have to be taken down to the police station and booked until things can be sorted out. This is just modern law enforcement. I'm not a big fan of it. I'm not a big fan of being hauled out to the bumper of a police car. You know, I said, the police officer has to treat me like a criminal. Has to treat me like a dangerous suspect who is probably concealing a weapon in his arms. His first need is to get me out of a car, or get me out of my escape vehicle that might be used to escape him, okay? You know, so he does all these things, he does that. But you don't want to be, you know, and thank goodness for police officers that go, walking around saying hello to people. It happens to be, I'm in my car. Hello, sir, I just happened to pull you over. He's going to take your license and registration because I think he has to. I think that's a requirement. You know, it's called trolling, or I call it trolling, because they're trying to see if you've done something wrong so that they can turn what sometimes is called a routine traffic stop into a potential arrest scenario. You know, almost all guys that get caught for infractions in the past, for breaking some law in the past, end up getting incarcerated by police because they were stopped in a routine traffic stop. That's why there's so many stops going on, and sometimes for some really pathetic little reasons, it's trolling. They're trolling around, you know, I'm going to get your license and your registration. If this car, or if you have been involved in anything else, it's going to color how the rest of the thing goes. And I didn't want to get into this particular one, except to say that police usually don't have much of a choice. They have to treat you as if you are a horrible, evil, criminal, gangster, no matter what, until they have evidence that you aren't such a person. I think it is from there that you please stand here, and if you do anything that seems at least a bit provocative, they'll pull their gun on you. You know, I think it's bad. I think it has a terrible thing to do with the Band of Brothers being much more concerned about protecting yourself and protecting your brother officers than it is to contributing particularly to public safety. Of course, this has all been gone over by lawyers and other entities that seek to that seek to protect your rights and seek to determine just exactly what your rights are. These things are never explained to the populace because the populace may have a problem with it, and law enforcement prefers to rely upon the fact that they have badges and guns, and that these are intimidating things, and that tools of intimidation works far better than being transparent and open. And that's sad. It's sad that we go to those kinds of levels. But that's what police have become. They have become instruments of intimidation. I don't think it's justified. I don't think it's justified. But then honestly, you know, I don't live in their world. I have a good friend now who's a state police officer in our area. And when he talks about these things, he talks about, I have to come to nice places with nice people because I spend my whole day dealing with bad people and evil. And I need to go to other things. And you know what? I have to respect his feelings and how he's trying to deal with the life that he's presented with. So, if they have to put me out on a bumper, I said, can I at least get a coat so that I don't freeze and die? You know? I was reading about the schools complaining about the fact that they had, since the economic downturn, had reduced funds for school security. And that most of these funds came from the federal government through an instrument called Title IV. And that the enabling legislation was safe and drug-free schools. And that's why it comes to the whole idea of the gateway drug. Much of evil today, organized crime, for instance, in the United States, is wrapped around structure. We have on the books prohibition on illicit, well, and illicit drug is a drug that you're not supposed to have. So it's kind of redundant to say that it's a prohibition. There are prohibited drugs. You can't get them except with a prescription. And there are a whole fleet of one, I guess they're called Category 1 drugs, which you are not allowed to have under any circumstances. And when you take away every legitimate way of procuring these drugs if you want them, then organized crime has an ability to bring these drugs in, you know, that, and because you can charge whatever the market will bear, if you have junkies, I guess that's an urban term, if you have addicts to these drugs, because they will destroy livelihood, whatever, they will do whatever it takes in order to get those drugs, for example. Whatever. I think the social destruction that comes with addictive drug use is established. And that's fun. You know, it's well understood. The fact that there is no legitimate way of getting this has turned the drug traffic, the traffic in drugs that are prohibited in the United States. Drive a large segment of profitable crime, much more profitable than being a simple thief, you know, than stealing stuff and trying to resell it, much more profitable than, you know, most other crimes don't really have a payoff involved, except as it's incidental to the operations of these criminal syndicates, you know. Because assassinations, you know, paid assassinations don't typically happen unless one crime boss chooses to act against another crime boss. I'm a libertarian, which means, you know, I think we should be very, very careful about what we prohibit. I think we should be very, very careful about what we write laws on. You know, I think there's more important things criminals should be doing. Drug lords don't tend to bother regular people. Don't tend to. I don't say they can't, but they don't tend to. And in such circumstances, you know, and therefore, even having criminal syndicates doing drug, you know, basing pretty much the root of their power on drugs doesn't affect regular people. You know, there is no reason that a crime boss should even know a normal person's name. It just shouldn't really come up. Or it should come up rarely. I watch Burn Notice, you know. I watch that TV show with a thing. I buy seasons of it on DVD and rewatch and stuff like that. So, I've seen where this stuff goes and where it comes from and how it is. Or at least how television portrays it. I don't know if that's terribly accurate or not, but it's probably among the best portrayals we probably have of these things. And as honest as you can probably fit into an hour, you know, into getting the basic resolution to a storyline in an hour. And what it is that drug dealers don't care about normal people. You know, they don't try to addict you to drugs at gunpoint. They don't really need to do... They don't want to do that. They don't need to. There's plenty of demand for the product. Trust me. That's how they got rich in the first place. They open up new markets by getting rid of their competitors to some degree. You know. But they function like corporations, you know. They deal with each other. They try to knock out their competition. But, you know... But most of the times they actually work with the competition. It's something you can do that I can do better, you know. And you know, just like any other business, they'll try to pull things together. Anyway, so, these Title IV funds have been shriveling up, and I know I'm kind of jumping back, but I need to. And you have to understand, this stuff was ostensibly done not to, you know, the whole safe and drug-free schools. Let me tell you what the impetus was for it. It was the concept of being drug-free. Schools have fallen into a horrible trap. They tend to chase whatever incentives get thrown at them. Every school in the nation, and this was done, interestingly, by a company at first. It was done by Kentucky Fried Chicken. Isn't that weird? The whole drug-free schools, no, actually, I'm trying to remember what it was. I think it was the conglomerate that owned Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, and Kentucky Fried Chicken. They, you know, they're a tax advantage to doing nice things. And the whole drug-free America thing, the thing that originally launched this stuff. When you saw back in the past, most of these have gone away because the federal money just isn't there for it anymore. The whole bat thing, that these things were like bats. I don't know if that was trying to feed off the whole mystique of Batman and, you know, a strong crusader for justice or whatever. And there were police cars decked out in these things, and they were basically going around pumping up the whole idea of drug-free schools. And there was eventually legislation written, and that's where this thing came from. Lots of money, and it was basically to put these programs into schools, and what the program was bring police into schools. That was new, that was wild. People were kind of weird about it. They didn't know how they felt about law enforcement being in such close proximity to children without parents in the mix. And everybody knows that parents aren't in that mix. Except as tools of school, you know. Trust me, the PTA is not what it purports to be, some sort of wonderful interface, you know, some sort of way for parents to get involved with schools. It is a new method for schools to invade the family and to co-opt the last of what's considered to be free and charitable time. You know, we don't really want you giving your spare time to other entities. We want you to give your spare time to the school. It's not the school isn't well healed. Schools are the most well-moneyed, the most well-supplied. Teachers are the highest-paid civil servants that we have. For what they do, schools are paid handsomely. Teachers are paid handsomely. And when anybody comes to you and says that we don't pay schools enough, that's usually by the behest of the teachers union, and they start saying, isn't your child's education, and you are to translate that into your child's future, your child's success, everything about your child is tied to how much teachers get paid, they're using your child as a human shield. And that's the act of a terrorist. That is the attack of an extortionist. And I think that's quite the right way to do it. It is a soft extortion. And that's usually how a lot of things get done these days by government. You don't want to ruffle feathers. You don't want to make problems. Getting back to the whole concept of the gateway drug is to use it as a soft extortion to employ children. Children are the preferred victim of stock extortion. And this is rather new. Because, really, a great concern for a child's life as a child is kind of it's really a rather new concept. Children were always considered, now people used to say, oh no, you know, we've done lots of studies and we've determined that the whole attitude that children were simply little or inexperienced adults wasn't prevalent in former days. But I think that's twisting again. I think that's twisting of reality. I think that is the interjection of psychology and sociology type orthodoxy, which I was talking about before, into the frame. And that I reject them. I do not, you know, I walked away from the child development orthodoxy, and I have a serious problem with orthodoxy by nature, because they are usually built into the fabric of a study. If you go to school for sociology, if you go to school for psychology, if you go to school for education, if you go to school for things like that, it is not so much making you an expert in some field, it is the indoctrination into an orthodoxy. And I think it was, I had it slapped into my face very readily by a principal when I was serving one of the few times that I have served as a school teacher, which I've only done three times. First time it was not a school teacher, it was kind of a tutor. I was totally unlikely. The second time I was in prison, and I was only like a substitute teacher. And third time was as an official, actual, life certified school teacher at a school. And that last time, it was the principal I was brought in, and I was the principal's office a lot of school teachers, far more than I ever was a student. I was a quiet kid that was relatively quiet. And so I didn't get into trouble at all as a kid. As a teacher I was having problems, but they were all problems having to do with my break of the orthodoxy. Probably the most egregious thing I did was I set up what's called a wiki and taught the kids how to use it. And let me tell you, very easy, so it didn't take much time at all. And of course, the first thing the kids did was exercise a rebellion. You have to understand that school is forced. School is an institution of soft intimidation, and that when children are given kind of free rein to do what they want, they will lash out at these things. However they feel like they can get a dig in on a teacher or an administrator or the system, they'll do it. And they did. I got called in the principal's office. They said, "You'll shut that down." And I said, "They have free speech rights." And they said, "Well, you, as an employee, are not going to operate such a thing. You're not going to do that." And of course, since I was an employee, I don't have free speech rights in my place of business. You know. Because I'm an employee, I'm a kept person. Kept people don't have don't have the same rights as like a self-employed person. Self-employed people can stay and do pretty much what they please within their rights. Employed people can, you know, and that's why it's very important that many people in life be employed as possible. You know, it keeps a lid on of dissent. Government likes employees. They do not like independent contractors. They do not like self-employed people, particularly. You know, it's really, they don't like them. They really want everybody pushed into this stuff. They like the fact now that only in a big corporation can you get the kind of benefit that that people would like to have, people would like to see. That's considered good to a large majority of those who are invested in power. Look at the situation. On the side of the road, this guy pulled his lights on, and now there's two or three vehicles doing the same thing. And that's weird. He drove right past them. Why? I don't even comprehend what's going on there. Why somebody would be turning that way. Anyway, so, doesn't matter. We put up the facade all the time that these institutions, that all these things are good and full of good people. And, you know, I really don't have much to say about the people in them. There can be good people, there can be bad people. It really seems to reflect society decently, you know. I don't think they, you know. But I was put through an orthodoxy test. I failed, and I was happy to fail. I think that ended up being my biggest problem, was that I was not properly converted to the Orthodox. My principal, who I considered to be kind of a dim, thuggish man, I will not say who or where he was. The last person I had to really deal with as an educator. On any level. I never consider myself much of an educator. At least in a public school sense. He decided that I was not a good teacher because I had not gone through student teaching. Which is patently stupid. That is a patently stupid concept. Except from one standpoint. So he may not have been very good. He may not have been very good. He may have just simply known that student teaching is the time when it is determined by people, by those in authority, whether you have accepted, whether you serve the Orthodox. I didn't serve the Orthodox. In fact, I was a person who was going to permanently stay outside of the Orthodoxy, and therefore I had no place in public school. If you don't serve it, you have wasted 4 years of your life getting that kind of education. And essentially, that's kind of what happened. Uh, I guess you can look back and say that my college career was something of a waste, because I didn't internalize the orthodoxy of child development. And, you know, strangely enough, I did wash out of the child development version of student teaching, which is called practical. And it really wasn't because I did badly in it. It was because I was going in too many other directions at the time. I was working three jobs, you know. I had two kids and a wife to support. And a mortgage and utilities and everything else, you know, everything that kind of comes with that stuff. And to the practicum. It was during the summertime. It only came around once. It was only during the summer, so it only came once during the year. I was coming up to my senior year, and I said, I'm not gonna wait until after next senior year to try to practice them again. Says, and circumstances aren't going to change. I'm still going to need all these jobs. You know, I can't save up the money to be able to do this cute little thing. I just can't do that. It's just not the cards.